Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Wouldn't you like to take a vacation from your bills? Well, you can. With credit card balances at an all-time high and Golden Oak's 5.25% rate, you could be saving thousands of dollars after a simple phone call. Call today and get your cash in as little as 14 days and make no payments for 2 months. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
6.19 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
6:15, I'd love to know the thought process behind picking the music, but who knows, it'll be a mystery forever. Highs today is 75, right now it's 59. Causeway one way in each direction, as I understand it, with the fog. And really throughout the week, a lot of clouds yesterday, a little bit of a drizzle in Belchase, but no rain really forecast, highs of 7, and really, I can't even say a drizzle, it was more of a mist. 75 today for a high, and mid-70s to upper 70s all the way through Sunday, so perfect weather for the Super Bowl for everybody that's visiting from frigid Kansas City and Philadelphia. If you know them and they're coming, tell them to leave their heavy clothes at home. Don't take up the space in the suitcase. Leave it for souvenirs on the way back. Aaron Dusso joins us now, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, to talk about the latest on President Trump and what he's up to. Morning, Professor. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me.
I was supposed to be on Indianapolis TV yesterday, and I was just wondering if you saw any of it or if you were able to see my ugly face on TV in Indianapolis yesterday.
I didn't happen to catch that, but I'm definitely going to check it out online.
Because the reporter was cracking wise, saying, do you think you guys will be able to keep the lights on this time? And I said, do you remember that? And I said, yeah, I remember that. What I remember more vividly is Tracy Porter picking Peyton Manning to win the Super Bowl. But that's another story. Let's talk about President Trump and what he's been up to as of late. We'll start with cabinet choices. I find the Bill Cassidy thing interesting because I got to believe what I know of Bill Cassidy. He does not approve of RFK being the director of, what is it, Cabinet Health, Human and Resources? What's the department?
Right.
Health and Human Services, but he voted for his confirmation. I got to believe that's in an attempt to crawl back to Donald Trump, but I think that ship has sailed when he voted to impeach him. So I just don't understand what Bill Cassidy's doing there, because if I were to be his friend and advise him, I'd say, Bill, you know what? The election's over. You're not going to win that. You may as well save your dignity and your credibility as a physician and vote no. What do you think's going on there?
I mean, I agree. It has to be a political calculation that you're going to be able to accomplish more for yourself and the things you want to do in office if you're, you know, kind of return to the good graces of the Trump administration. And I think there is a, even, you know, he's voting for him for impeachment, that it'll be a big strike against him. But Trump has shown, you know, if you are sufficiently willing to, you know, kiss the ring, you will be brought back into the fold.
But brought back into the fold, but if you're running against somebody, you being primaried in essence, I don't see, do you think that Fleming would drop out of the race? I don't see it going that far. Do you?
I mean, not likely, but what can happen is the support for the opposition in the primary can be, you know, significantly curtailed in this way. You know, and also he has to be able to consideration with the voters is that, you know, he doesn't want to be seen as anti-Trump. And showing that you can go along sometimes when you feel like you need to, that can also win you votes.
What is going on else with Trump's cabinet nominees? I know Kristi Noem has been here for the Super Bowl. She's done and through the process. What about the other cabinet positions? Where do they stand?
Well, the big one last night, Pam Bondi was confirmed as Attorney General. So that was one of the controversial ones. She wins 54-46, which means she got one Democrat. Fetterman voted for her. Then the big ones, of course, are the RFK and Gabbard, which are the controversial ones. Obviously, they both, you know, over the last yesterday went through the committee votes very close. When you have a vote on committee, that's a strong signal that you're going to be voted, you know, by the entire Senate and confirmed. So we would bet that RFK and Gabbard are both going to end up being confirmed. Last I saw is Grassley, the chair of the Judiciary Committee, said he'll move with Keshe Patel, the FBI director nominee, next week. So those are the last of the big controversial ones. Everyone else would mean it's just really just waiting, you know, their turn for a vote.
President Trump this time, completely different than President Trump last time with the speed at which he's moving, right?
Right, yeah. You know, this has been strong, you know, with the Republicans in the Senate have moved really quickly. So if you think about in comparison to Biden at the 35, you know, day mark, which was the end of February, he had only confirmed, you know, 8 of the cabinet secretaries, you know, that he had. Trump's already at and passed that, you know, at that point and is almost certainly going to pass it by the end of this month. So it's moving much faster than Biden, but even faster than he did his first term. So this has been strong work on the part of the Republicans within the Senate to move these nominees through quickly.
For when we come back, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about what the president said about Gaza and where that could lead. And we'll also talk about the importance of the midterms coming up for people that are either delighted with what the president is doing and want to make sure that it stays that way or are horrified at what he's doing and want to see that it goes back the other way. 621, Aaron Dusso is our guest, our professor of political science, our friend from Indiana University, Indianapolis, 621. We're on Radio Row here at the New Orleans Convention Center. Back in a flash, traffic now, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, live from Media Row here at the Host Committee's Media Center, celebrating Big Game Week, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. As a matter of fact, Aaron Dusso, Associate Professor of Political Science at Indiana University, Indianapolis, is in the Treasure Chest virtual power seat. So, Professor, when it comes to his remarks with, I guess, the Israeli Prime Minister was in town, and he mentioned something about Gaza. For people that have been all caught up in Super Bowl, tell them what the president said that he plans on doing with Gaza.
What the president said yesterday and has intimated before is that it would be the systematic removal of Gazan residents, you know, in particular Muslims, and into other countries in the hopes that he could turn Gaza Strip into some type of Trump resort. Importantly, this is what I just said is ethnic cleansing and is traditionally understood to be a human rights violation and a crime against humanity.
I don't see where that's going to settle things down in the Middle East at all if you're going to say basically he's going to give Gaza to Israel or the United States is going to annex it and make it a resort, a beautiful Riviera-type resort or something is what he said.
Right. Yeah. You know, this has become a U.S. property of some sort. This is something that we've not talked about, you know, basically post-World War II, where the United States to basically take large parts of lands from around the world as their own and then, you know, essentially establish some type of, you know, life there. So it's difficult to figure out what is actually going to happen because we don't have a lot of modern equivalents to this.
What does the Constitution say about presidential powers and what would be involved legally? Because the president can't just say, I want it, I'm going to take it. This is the United States, can he?
Well, right. I mean, obviously the Congress is going to have to be involved. I mean, what we've seen over the last 2 weeks is so many things that have happened, which, you know, historically and constitutionally would need to have congressional approval. The issue is that it seems to me, if I was going to sum up the Trump administration, their method is that we're going to can do anything until somebody stops us. And so the question is, will courts, you know, ultimately this thing ends up in courts, and this could end up in international courts, as the United States tends to not follow international court proceedings. And so the concern here is, will Congress actually do something? Congress has always had the collective action problem in that they, in order to do something, they have to work together. And that's made Congress weak in a lot of ways. And so Congress has never faced an administration like the Trump administration that is going to push as hard as possible on every angle. And it's not clear what Congress is going to be able to do to stop them.
Somebody texted in and said, Tommy, I think that's a joke. I don't think it is. Do you think he was joking?
No.
Trump?
No, I do not think he was joking, because this isn't the first time it's been mentioned. He's even used the word cleanse. You know, cleanse, there's some certain buzzwords in the, you know, the human rights world. And that is a buzzword that is that's a bad, bad buzzword. That was something that the United States has not been a part of. And, you know, certainly in a long, long time. And the times in our history when we have been a part of it are horrible times that we wish we could forget, and in some places we ban, because we're so ashamed of what they are, such as removing, you know, Native Americans from their lands. That is something that's just not a good part of our history, and we should not, you know, we'll be willing to accept it.
And with that being said, midterms coming up, for those that favor what the president's doing, the midterms would be a chance for the country to reinforce that. For those that don't like what he's doing, that would be a chance for the country to express their displeasure. And historically, the pendulum kind of swings widely, doesn't it?
Right. I mean, the expectation historically is that in the midterms that Democrats should get control of the House at a minimum. There's still a favorable map for Republicans, so Democrats would have to kind of win a couple of surprises in order to control the Senate. But at least with the House, that would, you know, it poses some kind of a problem, but it doesn't pose as big a problem if you don't control the Senate, because a lot of this international treaties and that would have to occur to take over Gaza would have to go through the Senate. And if the Senate is still Republican controlled, then seemingly the Republicans could rubber stamp that.
All right. Thank you, Professor. Appreciate your time. Aaron Dusso, Associate Professor of Political Science, Indiana University, Indianapolis. We're going to stay local. We'll come back, talk to Mark Romig, our friend, Chief Marketing Officer for New Orleans and Company, about the Super Bowl experience and everything coming up with the Super Bowl game on its way Sunday. Here right now, time for WWL First News. All right, it is 6:44, and there's some fog issues on the causeway, so it's moving a little slowly. Be aware of that. Mark Romig joins us now, our friend, Chief Marketing Officer for New Orleans and Company. First of all, thanks for the accommodations here on Radio Row that you've made for us. It's just a beautiful set. It really is.
Thank you. You're most welcome. It's a great place to be this week.
Yeah, it really is. Talk about the party last night, because I know you went. Coleman went over here, Chris Coleman. He remembers some of it. I presume you remember more of it.
Yeah, it was fantastic. You know, we have over 7,000 credentialed media, and one of the most important things we do is make sure that they know that we love having them in New Orleans. And the host committee put on a spectacular party last night over at Mardi Gras World, which is just right next door to where we are. It started at 7 o'clock, and I think people are still getting home right now.
I wanted to go. I did, Mark, but, you know, it was a school night, and
yeah,
I knew 3 o'clock was going to come very early, and I was tempted.
But it was fantastic. I mean, Amanda Shaw was playing. We had Master P. We had chef demonstrations from Arun Sanchez and Emeril Lagasse.
Wow.
All the food and all the drink that you wanted. And the Mardi Gras World just turned out the most beautiful decorations. It was really terrific.
Is it just me, or does it seem to be a little quieter here this morning than it has been?
You know, it is. I think people are just waking up. And
you know what it reminds me of as a local? I'll tell you this, Ash Wednesday. That's what it reminds me of. It reminds me of Ash Wednesday around here this morning, because everybody was out partying last night, and it's everybody will get their feet on it, and then it'll come back alive around 8 o'clock.
If I may, I want to give a shout-out to Alex Aguilar and the entire team at the host committee that organized that function last night. You'll be hearing some good comments, I'm sure, today.
Oh, I'll bet. Yeah, I heard them already from the staff. Tell me about the Super Bowl experience, because I walked through it yesterday before the media preview, And man, I'm going to tell you what, I don't even know how to begin describing this. There is something for literally every member of the family.
It really is a spectacular way to experience the magic of Super Bowl week with your family and friends. It starts today. It opens up at 3 p.m. It'll go to 10 p.m. today through Friday, and then on Saturday it'll run from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. We're also running a shuttle from four locations around the city to make it easy.
That is huge. Talk
about that. Make it easy for people to get there. So we're running a shuttle that will begin at 2 p.m. Today. You can catch the shuttle at Oakwood, New Orleans East Plaza, the Audubon Zoo, or Delgado Community College, and the tickets are only $10. The other thing I wanted to mention is that kids 12 and under are free at the experience, which is, you know, it's a great way to have fun. Now, you mentioned all the things that you can do. You've got player autographs. You've got interactive games. Of course, the Vince Lombardi Trophy is there. Everyone wants
Deuce to get it. Deuce is going to deliver it this afternoon.
That
right?
was fantastic when he was on the second line this weekend.
But this afternoon he's going to deliver it again,
I believe,
I think,
he has
right?
it in property, and he's going to get it over there. We got the Super Bowl rings from all the other Super Bowls, this being the 59, so you've got 58 Super Bowl rings to look at. And then the NFL shop, which is a wonderful way to bring some good swag home.
You can watch a football, as I understand it, being made, and you can have a custom football made.
So
how does that work?
They describe how the official football of the NFL is made. You see it from beginning to end, and it's an amazing process. Again, it's very educational, but it's also a lot of fun. You can even run a 40-yard dash if you're up for it.
Can you? Will they make a football for you? That's what I was confused about.
Yeah, there's some opportunities. I believe, and you can speak to the vendor there, where these footballs can be, you know, sort of personalized or customized.
While you wait or not?
I'm not sure of that.
Okay,
but go to the NFL Experience and you can check it out.
I can't even begin. First of all, people might be concerned because they're going to say, "Oh, it's too crowded," but the hall that it is in is huge, and there are numerous stations for each event.
Yeah, in fact, this media center is in several halls put together, and I think it's a very similar experience.
I said hall, but it's huge. I walked through it yesterday.
It's amazing. I remember from 2013 and how much fun it was, and there's literally you could spend all weekend there.
You could.
It's like going to the National World War II Museum. Mm-hmm. You think you can make it in an afternoon, but it takes several days to go.
Uniforms on exhibit, and like you're saying, Super Bowl rings and the Lombardi Trophy is going to be there. Tell me about some other things going on in the city that you guys put together for the locals as well as the Super Bowl visitors.
Yeah, you know, this a historic moment for us will be Saturday when we have the host committee Super Bowl parade. It starts at 10 a.m. down at the end of the French Quarter by the French Market. We'll come through the French Quarter to Canal Street and then wind its way onto St. Charles Avenue. It's going to be an exciting way for us to demonstrate that Mardi Gras culture to all of our visitors that are in town. And Todd Graves, who you know, founder of Raising Cane's, will serve as king. And he has used this opportunity to broadcast to his fellow corporate CEOs around the country that New Orleans and Louisiana is open for business, and what a great ambassador that he will be in the parade. So
this is the first Super Bowl parade that they've ever had,
yeah,
right?
That's right. Yeah. And no other city can do it better than us. So
I wonder why I haven't been here for 11 of them, although I was a wee lad when the first one happened, but you wonder why it took so long, but it's a great idea.
Logistics
really
are what they are, but I think we found in the planning process the NFL agreed that this would be a great way for us to demonstrate, you know, why New Orleans is so unique and why we're a city that's built to host.
Who's going to be on the floats? I'm just curious.
Well, you'll have representatives from some of the corporate sponsors of the NFL for the Super Bowl. Our organization, New Orleans and Company, will have a float. You've got the New Orleans Tourism and Cultural Fund, another sponsor of the Super Bowl. They'll have riders. There'll probably be some celebrities sprinkled through that you'll recognize.
Any overlaps with maybe some carnival crews where I also happen to be business members? You don't have to disclose anything.
No, I know.
Look, you wear the coif hat and this and that and the other thing, all that stuff. I don't want any secrets.
No, that's all right. Barry Kern and his team have pulled together the best floats for this, and I think you'll find that you'll get that sense that it is a Mardi Gras parade. They'll be throwing trinkets to the crowds. And, again, it's a way for the visitors that come here hopefully see something that they like and they'll come back often.
Is it the same route as a Christmas parade or not?
It's very similar to the Crew of Boo, the Crew of Boo, that comes down through the French Quarter. So it'll go in front of Jackson Square and then make its way to St. Charles Avenue. There'll be an opportunity to have a toast to Todd Graves by officials at Gallier Hall. and then it'll go and end right at St. Joseph.
Tell you what, to bring the family out and maybe take the shuttle even, what time's the shuttle run, do you know?
The shuttle on that, on Saturday, the shuttle begins at 8 a.m. Now, that's for the experience.
Now, I understand that, but you would be close enough to
walk.
Yeah,
you can walk right over to St. Charles Avenue or Canal Street.
You can walk to the parade, then you can come back, and you can enjoy everything else with the Super Bowl experience and walk around a quarter. You can make a day of it, I'm telling you.
It really is. We're trying to make it as convenient as possible. We all know there's, with all the street closures, we've got to get through this week, and come next Tuesday, we're going to look back and say this was the best Super Bowl ever.
And look ahead to Mardi Gras. We'll take a break, pick it up with Mark Romig when we come back. 651 traffic now, WWL. Tommy Tucker here live at the Radio Row Host Committee's Media Center celebrating Big Game Week in New Orleans, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So, WWL. It is 6:58. We're talking to Mark Romig, who's our host, really, I guess, Chief Marketing Officer for New Orleans & Company. He's in the Treasure Chest Casino Power Seat. Pardon me, Mark, about the Louisiana Culture Festival in the French Market.
This is a free festival, Tommy, that'll be Friday and Saturday at the French Market on Friday from 11 to 5 and Saturday from 11 to 5 as well. We've got music stages. We have a culture corner stage with all sorts of activities. There's also great food. You can have a cochon de lait po' boy, crackling, Creole smoked sausage, boudin. It's just going to be great. And it's free. So come down to the parade on Saturday as well and go by the French Market and catch some Louisiana culture. This is a way for us to demonstrate that it's not only New Orleans that's hosting the Super Bowl, but Louisiana. And it gives us an opportunity to bring in all the best aspects. We've got making a jazz gumbo. This is some of our educational points of the festival. How to do Hungarian dance. We're going to have a conversation about sausage making with Chef Terry Searcy. Couscous. Storytelling, just a great opportunity for family and friends to come on down to the French Market, and it's free.
No politicians on that sausage.
We're going to have a lot of fun, and you'll also be able to do a fully dressed po' boy.
It sounds like a mini French Quarter Fest almost.
Yeah, and again, we've got 2 days of action-packed activities. Again, so much going on in the area this weekend. Take advantage of that park and ride for only $10 so that you don't have to bring your car downtown.
Give me
or do a ride share.
Catch y'all website where people can go and find out about all of this.
NOLASuperbowl.com is a one-stop shop. For tickets, you can go to the NFL One Pass. That's an app, and you can get your tickets there through Ticketmaster. So we're making it as easy as possible for
Super Bowl
to come
experience
down.
Starts when?
Starts today at 3 o'clock.
All right, so... Yeah. Get here early, have some fun, and, man, just spend a weekend here. Like Mark's been telling us for the last 20 minutes, there are a lot of things that you can do, some free, some not, but all in all, pretty affordable for the entire family. And catch that shuttle. Catch our website again.
NOLASuperbowl.com or the NFL One Pass. And one more thing, to learn all about road closures, ready.nola.gov.
Thank you. All right, 7:15. I'm getting some text here about the shuttles for the Super Bowl experience, and it's $10 per rider. That's round trip. And you're going to find parking anywhere near as cheap as that. Children 12 and under ride free. The tickets are sold on site where they pick you up, and then sales are cashless. And the pickup sites are Delgado at 5018 Orleans Avenue, Delgado Community College, Oakwood behind JCPenney, 6500 Magazine Street, that's at the Audubon Nature Institute, and the old Plaza Mall in New Orleans East at 5700 Reed. So really, you could have one heck of a day if you get that shuttle starting Saturday morning. You come down for the Super Bowl parade, you see what's going on in the French Quarter, and then you hang out, check out the Super Bowl experience, and then you take the bus back, and everybody's going to be tired and happy and have fun. One other good thing about the Super Bowl is that it can draw attention to some of the things going on in Louisiana. And with that, we welcome in James Karst, Director of Communications for the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana. Good morning, James. How are you?
I'm doing great, Tommy. How are you today?
I'm all right, sir. Tell me how, I guess, the big game, the Super Bowl, has drawn some attention to this.
Yeah, sure. So there is an environmental arm of the NFL called NFL Green, and they have been partnering with my organization and a number of other organizations in New Orleans as well to implement some sort of, tree planting, or in the case of our work, we put 59 tons of oyster shell into the water in Leeville and built an oyster reef with it. that's going to slow the rate of erosion there and create habitat for new oysters to grow. So, you know, they're just bringing attention to stuff like that. And to me, one of the wonderful things about it is that it helps people from other parts of the world understand that New Orleans and Louisiana are, you know, really fueled by our seafood industry and by communities that are outside of New Orleans. I love New Orleans. I live in New Orleans, but there are many other places beyond it that are really important to our culture and our future.
Governor Landry's got a big setup with Louisiana and the importance to the nation, and that really is not in conflict with coastal restoration. Coastal restoration is a very important part of that, is it not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There is virtually no one. I would challenge you to find a single person who wants to see Louisiana wash away. You know, everybody recognizes that if we can hold on to more of our state or as much of our state as possible, that's a good thing. That's a good thing for industry. It's a good thing for the people who live here, for communities. It's a good thing for those of us who are raising children here. And, you know, it's energy and seafood and parades. You know, if you love New Orleans, if you love Louisiana, you want to save it.
Yeah, you know, I thought it would be interesting to ask you if you could go back just to talk about the history of erosion in Louisiana. And this is the 11th Super Bowl that we've hosted, the first one going back to the late 60s, I believe. I don't have the list open in front of me right now. Talk about how I do have it in front of me right now. As a matter of fact, first Super Bowl we hosted was in 1970. So talk about how the coastline has changed since 1970, because it seems like we've been talking about it for a long time. And how the efforts have changed to actually do something about the erosion and the loss of coastline since 1970.
Yeah, sure. That's an interesting question. You know, in 1970, there were people who were aware that coastal wetlands were vanishing. They were being converted into open water, but there wasn't a lot being done about it. So, you know, obviously we've had singular tragedies like Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Ida, the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, and those have been really catastrophic for large swaths of wetlands. But also something that has happened since then is we got a really robust coastal program. A number of organizations, nonprofits like mine, became involved in trying to preserve our coast and trying to make the case that it is important and that it should be a government priority, that this is the kind of stuff we should be spending money trying to save. And, you know, we've seen a lot of success. You know, there's a funding mechanism. You know, these projects are funded now. They're built. They're implemented. There's a lot of engineering that goes into stuff. And then there's a lot of small stuff as well. You know, people are planting trees and, you know, there are water gardens that are cropping up all over New Orleans. There are oyster reefs. So, yeah, there's a lot of great stuff happening.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back. We're talking to James Karst, who is Director of Communication with the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana, about Living Shoreline project that they're working on in NFL Green and how the Super Bowl is an opportunity to bring some awareness to the coastal restoration efforts in Louisiana, which are extremely important. And it would be, I think, shocking for you, and we'll talk to James about this, if there's anywhere where you can go and overlay a map of 1970 or even before that to where we are now and see what differences have been made or something in between even. We'll take a break for traffic now, WWL. 7:25 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, live on Radio Row at the Host Committee's Media Center, celebrating Big Game Week, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Our guest, James Karst, Director of Communications for the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana, is in the Treasure Chest Casino virtual power seat. James, I asked you beforehand about some kind of overlay maps or anything like that. Is there any way, any site where people can go and overlay what the coastline looked like in 1970 to what it looks like now, or maybe in between, and to show how bad it got and maybe how it's getting a little bit better that you know of?
You know, a really good place to look for that kind of stuff is on the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority website. Like, they have maps that show changes over time, and also the predicted changes going forward if we build restoration projects, as well as maps what it will look like if we do not build restoration projects. And, you know, that's always pretty striking, pretty shocking. I can tell you what those types of maps show, though. They show, you know, if you go back to, say, the 1920s or earlier, the maps are going to show wetlands that look, you know, like land. They look pretty intact. And then let's say you skip ahead to the 1960s or 1970s, the wetlands are really going to look like Swiss cheese. We'll have canals. walls, you know, straight lines cut through them. Somebody once told me that Mother Nature doesn't make straight lines, so obviously those were made by humans. And then, you know, it depends where you're looking at specifically, but if you were to look at maps of today, I mean, there are plenty of places where there used to be land where you could stand, where now you would be swimming, you know, or snorkeling. So
one question I always get is about the sustainability of these projects, and does can a hurricane come in and wash out what you've done, and then you're back to where you started again? Talk about that, if you will, please.
Yeah, well, it kind of depends on the type of project, but yeah, absolutely. If you do a dredging project, it is going to experience subsidence. The land is going to sink, and of course, with sea level rise, the water going up, it will be underwater eventually. But I look at it this way, you know, if you've got a roof on your house and you lose a few shingles, well, you put some new shingles or a new roof on there, yeah, it could get ripped off again, but you can't do without it, so you have to do it anyway, you know. So there are other things that we can do. We can make choices that will really address the causes of the coastal land loss, but so far a lot of what has happened has dealt with the effects of it.
Let me talk about something fun that's coming up about eating oysters on Oyster Night, which is a Super Bowl event for the coast. Talk about that, if you would, please.
Yeah, so Oyster Night is today. It is a citywide in New Orleans event where restaurants are going to be serving oyster specials, including a lot of restaurants that have not historically had oysters on the menu. And the idea is to promote, well, obviously to get people into our great restaurants here in New Orleans, but also to promote our oyster industry and our seafood industry in general. Also we'll be replenishing the shell that CRCL uses to build oyster reefs. So we expended 59 tons the other day, and so we need more shells so we can build more oyster reefs. So this is an effort to do that.
So eat oysters, you help restore the coast. How effective is it when it comes to the different efforts with specifically oyster shells and restoring oyster reefs? That seems like a just a great win-win situation.
Yeah, it is. It's wonderful. I would say in like very targeted locations, it is extremely successful. We have measured a 50% reduction in the rate of land loss in places where we have built oyster reefs, which is really an amazing reduction in land loss. Aside from that, these reefs create habitat for new oysters. So new oysters are growing on them, and then all the things that feed on oysters or that hang out there, crabs and other kinds of fish and birds. And then, of course, the reefs will knock down storm surge when a hurricane comes in. So they really have a number of great attributes. So, yeah, we got to do more of them. Eat some oysters.
Thank you, James. I appreciate your time and your efforts. James Karst, Director of Communications for the Coalition to Restore Coastal Louisiana. I'm Tommy Tucker. We're here, Radio Row, Host Committee's Media Center, celebrating Big Game Week, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. Quick break, then we're back. 7:30, time for WWL First News. 45, quarter till 8, another beautiful springtime day today, and all the way through the big game on Sunday. Highs in the mid to upper 70s right now. Delightful outside, even chillier here in the convention center. And we're talking to Mitch Rosen, vice president of the BetMGM network, to talk about a change that's happening for those of you that listen on 92.9 FM and 1350 AM to Odyssey's BetQL network. How you doing, Mitch?
Hey, Tommy, it's such a pleasure to be on with you. Thank you so much for having me, and the city has been so welcoming. I got in Sunday, and I'm based out of Chicago, and we love coming down to New Orleans, and thank you so much for having me on. What a pleasure to be on WWL.
What you been doing in the city since you got here?
You know, it has been a lot of work, and we've got a great team down here. We've been broadcasting from the media center like you. Mm-hmm. We have one of our shows, You Better You Bet, with Nick Kostos. And like you said, we're on the newly branded BetMGM network. We've moved on from BetQL, and it's strictly the BetMGM network. It's the same great lineup, same great content. And we branded as Wagertainment, Tommy. And throughout the years. It's we talk about sports betting, but there's such a huge entertainment value to it. So we can combine, you know, wager talk and entertainment, and it's been a great success. And we've been really fortunate to have a tremendous partner like BetMGM. And over the last 6 months, we've had a lot of talks and discussions, and we said, hey, why not get married in a great way? So we've partnered and we've branded the network as the BetMGM Network and combined the great content of our Odyssey and with BetMGM.
Tim Zimmer, whom you spoke to, who there manning Master Control, is a huge fan. And I can tell you he listens to all of the programs on 92.9 FM and 1350 AM. That's where you find him here in New Orleans. Break down, if you will, Mitch Rosen, Vice President of the BetMGM Network, some of the programs that are on, and explain what wagertainment is for people that don't quite know.
You bet. So we kick off in the morning at 5 a.m. Central here in New Orleans with the Daily Tip with Michael Jenkins and Chelsea Messenger. And then at 8 a.m., we now have a new show. It's renamed, but same great talent. It's called Bet Sweats with Joe Ostrowski and Sam Pionovich. And then in the afternoon, Nick Costos and Femi Adonidou, and they are on from 2 to 6 p.m. And then at night, it's BetMGM Tonight with Brad Evans and Ryan Horvat. And what wagertainment is, you know, this industry has changed over the years. So 5 years ago in this industry, we may have heard shows on the air say, well, we'll give you the lock of the day, 1-900, the lock of the day. And it's changed. Now it's part of the DNA of our content. And now it's more mass appeal in that more and more people are sports wagering. As we know it, it can be done on your phone in the mobile way. And we do mass appeal and we have fun with it. You know, we have great guests on our radio shows across the network, across the BetMGM network. It's not just experts in sports betting. We're going to, you know, we've had Kurt Warner on, great NFL spokesperson from the NFL Network, Boomer Esiason, Mad Dog Russo. So it's mass appeal guests, and our goal on the network is to reach as many people as we can. We entertain them, and oh, by the way, if they're sports wagering, that's even better, and we bring those two items together, and we call it wagertainment, and we've been very successful, and we're very proud of our team and what we've done so far.
And that's the tainment part of it, and what I mean by that is there's a lot of information to be gleaned, a lot of stuff to be learned if you're a sports fan, even if you're not wagering.
Absolutely. We, you know, what I like to say is we play the hits. And, you know, if there's a big football trade, if there's a big NBA trade, you know, whether it's with the Pelicans or the Lakers, and we saw what happened, you know, with the Mavericks and the Lakers over the weekend that shook the world, we're going to talk about it because, A, it's important in sports, and, B, it's important in the sports betting world. So, we, you know, we combine those two things, and that's really what wagertainment is. And, That's what makes it fun. And you have to have fun. We all know we love sports. Sports is fun. And if you're not having fun, you know, what else are you going to do? And you got to put a smile on people's face. And that's what we try to do.
Thank you, Mitch. If you can find a way to keep Zion on the court, please get back to me. Mitch Rosen.
Hey, there's rumors he was coming to the Bulls. That was the issue. Who knows? The trading deadline is tomorrow. Could happen. But, hey, it was a real pleasure. And, Tommy, thank you. Thank you so much. And, again, it's been an honor to be on this Heritage Radio Station, WWL.
Thank you, sir. Mitch Rosen, Vice President of the BetGM Network. You can hear it on 1350 AM, 92.9 FM. It's the best of both worlds, really. You get a lot of sports information, or you get some valuable information if you're looking to wager. When we come back, we're going to talk to somebody here from Ireland covering the Super Bowl, Michael Patrick McQuaid, actually. Spoke to him yesterday. I was talking about him. We'll join him when we come back. 7:50. Time for traffic now on WWL. All right, here we go. Tommy Tucker, WWL, Radio Row Host Committee's Media Center, celebrating Big Game Week, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso in the Treasure Chest. Power Seat is our friend, and we met yesterday. I was talking about him, Michael Patrick McQuaid with Pro Football Ireland. How you doing?
It's good to be here. How's it going?
I was giving him a hard time about his name because I said that'd be the same as me saying I was Jacques Thibodeau Boudreau from Louisiana, but that really is your name, right?
It is my name. It's funny because I remember speaking to you yesterday morning, and you said to me, that couldn't be your name, so I put the Patrick. Like, I've got Patrick as a middle name, so it sounds a bit more Irish, I guess.
I've been in your country. It's beautiful. Tell me what you guys are doing here. Why is Ireland a different kind of football in Ireland? Irish football is completely different than soccer, right?
Yeah, we've got like Gaelic football, which is a mix between rugby and soccer. And then in the west and in the south, we have hurling, which is a bit like ice hockey, but imagine sticks, no ice, and some helmets. It's a bit crazy, but yeah.
I was lucky enough to visit your country, and it amazed me how seriously you all take the regional football, right? The hurling, or is it the Irish Gaelic football? What is it?
It's both. It's completely intertwined in the society. You've got every village, every town has got a club. And it's more than that. It's, I said, it's intertwined. Like, you know, your family, your friends, your cousins, your neighbors, they all are with that club. You play for your club. You know, you die for the club. You know, if somebody passes away, everybody comes together from that club and you have a wake, etc. But yeah, it's all linked. And it's pretty, like, I guess when you come over here, and of course we've got 32 teams in the NFL, that's special in the sense of where these teams are, and we have one in New Orleans. But I guess in Ireland, it's pretty special because yes, it's around the world, but we don't really have it to that extent anywhere else, which is...
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Knicks Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Knicks, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Knicks Menswear, your friend in style.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Really cool.
But it's more organic in Ireland, is it not? Where it's from the roots and the local people that are involved in this?
Yeah, completely, like, you know, local people. And
when you have, say, for example, give me a team, a city and a team.
Oh, God. So my local team is called Donoghmore.
All right, but it would be people from there that are playing on a team.
Spot on.
Right?
And look, sometimes, especially with Dublin, etc., you have some blow-ins, as they call it, but it's mostly, you know, people that live in that area, they'll play for their club. And yeah, it's real family atmosphere and competitiveness. It's a bit like the NFL. It goes up and down every year.
The rivalry amazed me how, and you guys, it's like we have a rivalry with Atlanta, the Atlanta Falcons here and the Saints. It's nothing compared to the regional rivalries that you guys have.
It is, and when it gets...
it's personal, right?
It's personal, but when it gets special, like we would have maybe 82, 83,000 at a final every July, so it's pretty special. It's unique, I guess, as well, and I know people that come over and see it love it, and I think, look, we have a gra, as we call it in Irish, a real love for sport, you know, whether that's soccer, any Irish sport, or in this case, as we call it, American football. You know, so it's we definitely love Anaheim with a ball. We love watching it, so it's great.
St. Patrick's Day is coming up. For those of you that will attempt an Irish accent, that is a legitimate Irish accent. Real quick, Chris Coleman, who's here helping us produce, brought up a good point about the St. Patrick's Day parade. I know they have a big one in Dublin, and we used to try to call pubs in Ireland every St. Patrick's Day, and it never worked out. But do they throw vegetables, or do they hand out vegetables at the parade? Any kind of produce, cabbages, carrots, anything in Ireland?
If you had told me 5 years ago I'd be on a New Orleans radio station and somebody asked me this, I don't think so. Every town has a parade, whether that's north or south or whatever.
But
everyone
has produce being hurled at spectators?
Not that I know of. That's one thing I've never seen. You'll have people dress up as St. Patrick, and that's about the height of it.
You should start it. Bring that back to Ireland.
I will speak to our town.
I'll post bail for you. Okay. One of the neat things about being here is that occasionally, and it happened last time, NFL players wander by and you get to talk to them. And I'm very excited about talking to this current NFL player, and a name you're going to recognize, Thomas Morstead, joins us now, who is currently with the Jets. And we all know the role he played here with the Saints when he helped us win the Super Bowl. How you doing, Thomas?
I'm great. Glad to be here.
I mentioned I follow you on Twitter all the time. I see the charitable causes that you're involved with. You're constantly auctioning off jerseys, and we'll get to that in a second. I know you're here for Team Gleason, but I want to talk about your workout regimen that I see all the time as I follow you on Twitter. you're in pretty good shape for a, not just an NFL player, but a punter. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful way at all, but you look like you could play tight end. How important is it that you keep yourself in shape, not just for kicking, but everything? Because you look like, man, I'm telling you, you're huge.
Well, that's because you haven't seen me run in a while, side to side. But I appreciate it. Your body's your temple, and you only get one of them. And it's certainly my training and the way I take care of myself is certainly a big reason why I'm still playing. Fortunately for me, most of the stuff that I do for football, I'm going to do when I'm done playing. It's just a kind of a lifestyle. And, I want to be in my 70s and 80s, you know, snow skiing with my grandkids, you know. It's just part of who I am now.
Speaking of kids, and I'm a local guy, and I don't know, I guess you do know in the 15 years that has transpired, what a gift you all gave to the city of New Orleans in winning that Super Bowl. I'm talking about people, and you've heard the stories repeatedly, Thomas, about parents that didn't live to see it and grandparents that didn't live to see it and graves that were decorated after the Super Bowl and people that have subsequently gone on that got to see it thanks to you and the efforts. And an Indianapolis TV station was interviewing me yesterday, and they were trying to crack wise. And they said, well, do you think you guys would be able, do you remember when the lights went out? Do you think you'd be able to keep the lights on this time? Talking about the Super Bowl, right?
Yep.
And I said, I don't remember that, but I'll tell you what I do remember is Thomas Morstead kicking on sides to surprise y'all in the second half, which led to the Saints beating you. And he didn't like that too much. I doubt it made Indianapolis TV. But the point I'm making is that you guys gave us a gift. And do you realize what a legacy that you all, that team left here?
I don't know if you can fully realize that. I mean, it's an ongoing thing. People that when
and
you
you're still in the league, so maybe it's a little bit different.
Yeah, well, no, but I live here. You know, I never left, and so you know, that's the number one thing people talk to me about, and they don't want to know about. Man, what were you feeling? What were you going through? They want to tell you about where they were, who they were with. Honestly, there so many of them are in tears because it's a part of their family history almost, and it's such a cool thing for me because, you know, no matter how things are going, somebody comes up and says, you can tell it was like a big moment in their life with their family or somebody that they loved or were close with, and to be a part of so many people's really positive awesome memories is pretty cool.
I know you've been asked this 1,000 times, but I can't let you leave without asking, and that is, what is going on in your mind? What is going on in your stomach as you're walking out? Because I know you guys are practicing, you prepare and everything else, but you're about to pull the biggest surprise in NFL history. It's on your toes, literally, on your shoulders and everything else. What are you thinking? What's going through your mind right before that moment? Or as you're walking out and then teeing the ball up, I guess the refs had been told to look out for it, but you got to execute this. So tell me what's going on in your mind.
I mean, listen, the halftime is so long for the Super Bowl because of the show. So I was pissed off at Coach Payton originally because he told me at the very beginning of halftime. So I had to sit on it for like 30 minutes.
Could you surprise me with this maybe, right? Don't tell me.
But I'm glad he did in the end because I didn't react very well to it. I wasn't excited about it. I had a negative. I never thought we would call it. Mm-hmm. And what if it goes wrong? What if I screw it up? There's a million bajillion people watching. This is maybe our only shot at the Super Bowl ever. I may never get this chance again. All these things that are negative things. And so I had time to kind of like go through like a psych evaluation of myself and just talk myself off the ledge a little bit. I had this picture of my old coach, Frank Gans Sr., longtime NFL coach, who coached me my senior year in college. He had died the day after I got drafted, and so I just kind of kept him in my locker that whole year. And he always used to say that the more aggressive team normally won the game. And I thought, well, this is about as aggressive as it gets. Yeah. And I kind of relaxed, and then I thought, you know, every time Coach called me up in practice to hit this, I hit it how I wanted. And I was like, man, if we get this, we're winning the game, you know. And then all of a sudden, the good energy started going, and by the time I got out there, I was obviously I would say a little bit anxious to get going, but I was confident, you know. And now the nerves, I can't describe it. I've never had a moment since that would match it. I mean, I was almost blacked out.
You know, I
don't really remember the play itself. I remember before the play, I remember walking off the field and John Carney grabbed me, and he used to tell me before every onside, every time we practiced, he said, 10%, 10%, you know, just hit it light. And the last thing he said to me as I walked off the field, he was the last person I talked to, he said, Timo, 1%. Mm. You know, he knew I was just totally juiced up. And I went out there, took my steps, and just said a little prayer. And, you know.
The one thing we have in common about that is when it happened, I was hugging my kid and spinning around the room, and I almost blacked out. So
yeah.
We have that in common. Tell me about Team Gleason and what you're here to do, Thomas.
Oh, yeah, sure. Listen, everybody knows about Team Gleason here in New Orleans and what Steve's meant to the city. And it was really a cool thing, the fact that I'm still playing. He really, his story and all the way he's persevered and handled adversity his whole life, and particularly with ALS, has been really inspiring to me. And it's really kind of got me off my butt a little bit whenever I got released by the Saints. And you know, how am I going to handle this? You know, what's going to be my response? And the fact that I've been able to kind of get some stability back and find a little bit of a new football home with the Jets, I really wanted to do something this past season to say thank you and support him. And so we just we did a series of fundraising throughout the season, a punt for ALS campaign. You know, he's always got his never punt T-shirt, and so I crossed out the never and made it a punt for ALS shirt. It was really cool. We raised over $100,000, and a bunch of punters around the league donated their jerseys, so it was a really cool deal.
He's a good follow on Twitter, at Thomas Morstead. Always entertaining, interesting content. I would advise you to do that. How many kids you got now? Because it seems
five.
Like, I know you got a lot of them. Yeah.
Yep.
Y'all done or not?
You have to ask my wife.
Okay. So. All right. So we'll see. How many boys? How many girls?
We've got two boys, two girls, and then we just had a boy.
All right. Congratulations.
So, thank you.
God bless you, man. You do a lot of good work. I mean that. I enjoy following you on Twitter, watching all the charitable work that you do. Y'all follow him at Thomas Morstead. A pleasure to talk to you, Thomas. Thanks for stopping by. All right.
Good to see you. Thank you.
All right. Take it easy. We'll take a break and come back with more right now. A little bit late. Time to look at traffic on WWL. Yep, we continue our coverage of the big game, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and Soso from Radio Row and the Host Committee's Media Center. I know he's had a full career, but I don't know that he could ever envision himself being in the Treasure Chest Casino power seat. But, Joe, here you are.
I made it.
Joe DiCamera? How do you say your name?
Joe Giglio.
Joe Giglio.
Yes.
Okay. With WIP in Philadelphia, is that it?
Yes.
Is that an
DeCamera's actually our morning show host. I'm the midday. So we got Joe's all over the place.
All right,
so no worries.
It's Philadelphia.
Yeah,
I got Joe's. Hey, Joe, what do you say, Joe?
Just find one down the street, put him on the radio.
So let me ask you this. You work with Odyssey?
Yes.
Because I didn't see you at the Christmas party.
Oh, well, I was busy. We got a football team in the Super Bowl here. I'm working.
Tell me about that, about how, you know, because we just had Thomas Morstead here a second ago, and you remember the onside kick and all that stuff. And for us, man, I'm telling you, that was just, he left a memory for Louisianians that we'll never forget. Compare and contrast with Philadelphia with the, tell me your Super Bowl history. First of all, let's go from there.
So, 1980, here in New Orleans, Eagles' first Super Bowl, right? That they lost
yellow
that game to the
around
Raiders.
The dome. You remember that?
Yeah. So then 2004, they made it back, and that was after years of knocking on the door. The Eagles were in the title game 2001, 2002, 2003, and they finally get there in 2004, and everyone thought that was it. That was the year. And they lose to Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in the Super Bowl. And then, you know, you fast forward to 2017, the one they won. And that was out of nowhere. I mean, Tommy, not out of nowhere. That was a team that it was a lot of mercenaries, a lot of young players, a lot of one-year veteran free agents. And then they have this young quarterback, Carson Wentz, having an MVP-caliber season. He tears his knee up in December. And everyone in Philadelphia basically just says it's never going to happen. Like, this was, it's never going to happen. It's not meant to be. And then Nick Foles, backup quarterback, who had been the Eagles starter years before, comes in and has a magical run and wins the Super Bowl in 2017.
That was the Philly special.
That
right?
was the Philly special. Yeah. And they outdid Belichick and Brady, and it was amazing. And now this group, this is their second time there trying to. This is almost like, for me, the jump from, hey, they won one, to now they're becoming one of the best NFL franchises if they could get this one.
So, we're looking at, you know, for a new Saints coach here, and what was the Philadelphia sports fans' reaction to Andy Reid and parting ways with Andy Reid? Because, you know, here you are facing him again in the Super Bowl for the second time. So you can say, I don't know, do they look back on it as a good decision, bad decision? What?
So it's pretty split. I mean, there were a lot of people who were tired of Reed because it was almost like he was the coach that got you so far but couldn't get you over the hump. I was always a Reed guy. I thought, look, the Eagles were not much before he got there, and he kind of set the foundation. But what's interesting is they're still in his shadow because although they – it's almost like, you know, you have a divorce and most people move on. Well, he's done better. I can't deny that, right? He has multiple
He's got Patrick Mahomes,
He does, but he found him and drafted him.
That's
true. I mean, he developed him. So if the Eagles can win this game, I feel like you look back and everyone says, we did well after each other. But if the Chiefs win this game, he's got, you know, he's got all these rings. The Eagles just have the one. He'd have beat them head-to-head. There's a lot of Andy Reid angst still in Philadelphia about everything.
Nick Sirianni was not viewed too favorably early this season, right? Tell me about that. And when we played you guys in the second week of the season, that was a very close game.
It was, yeah. I mean, if not for your defenders running into each other, the Saints probably win that game. So Sirianni's interesting because he's obviously has a good resume, but we kind of parse it with, well, he's been given the best roster in the NFL the last 3 or 4 years. So he should win a lot of football games. He doesn't get a ton of credit, probably should get more. But early in the season, you mentioned they were struggling. They were coming off a collapsing last year. They were 2-2 after 4 weeks. And then in the fifth game of the season, they barely beat the Browns at home. And he started chirping with some fans in the crowd in Philadelphia, like back and forth. Like he was upset that they were upset at him. So
during the game?
Right after the game. Okay. They won, but he was annoyed that they were booing him. And when a coach starts yelling at his own fans, you know it's a lot. But you know what? They haven't lost the game since, so people like him.
Maybe it was a good idea.
Yeah.
You're the midday guy? You got a couple more minutes?
Yeah.
All right, good. Hang out. We'll continue to talk with Joe.
Giglio,
who is a midday guy at WIP. He's here to cover the Eagles. He's an Odyssey station, as are we. We're going to take a break for... I lost track. Tim, what are we doing here? Traffic or just taking a break? Huh? Taking a break. All right, now we'll be back here on WWL. Joe Giglio is sitting out, hanging out with us. He's with the Odyssey station, WIP, in Philadelphia. I got to talk to you about Kellen Moore, who... Well, what are you hearing in Philadelphia about Kellen Moore being the Saints head coach?
I think he's going to be the coach as soon as the Super Bowl's over. I imagine, you know, it's ironic. 2 years ago when the Eagles won the Super Bowl in Arizona, Jonathan Gannon didn't fly back with the team. He took the Arizona Cardinals job, and we're like deja vu here because it's the city, the host city, and it seems like our coordinator's going to stay. So I think Kellen Moore is your next head coach down here.
Tell me about how we're going to like that. Tell me what we can expect in Kellen Moore as a head coach. And I have seen some things about, I don't know if it was about him, about being a leader of men or not, being kind of quiet. Tell me about it. Because he's not going to, like you talk about Nick Sirianni, arguing with people in a crowd. He's not that kind of guy,
he's
right?
He's not. So I think he's clever. I think he's smart. I mean, you look at his resume, and I think he's like 37 years old to be a coordinator for this long. He's been on head coach interviews for a while. It feels like this is the next step for him. He's probably ready for this. I think he's very smart offensive mind. He just scored 55 in the title game. But, yeah, when you talk to him or you hear him, he doesn't come across as that, like, you know, the new wave of the Sirianni, Dan Campbell, Mike Tomlin, like, rah-rah, leader of men. Now, he might be able to grow into that, and maybe he's different behind the scenes than we see. But I think you're getting a smart offensive mind. We'll see how he grows as a leader.
But your station is all sports. Sometimes it doesn't have to be the head coach. It can be the coordinators that take on that role, right?
Sure. Yeah, and for him, you know, I think his staff will be important. Can he hire a really good defensive coordinator? Because you know how this is now. Like, what the coach has one side of the ball that they are expertise on, and the other side, so you got to have someone good. And if he hired, maybe it's his defensive coordinator that is more of that rah-rah guy.
So when it comes to his inventiveness, his creativity, managing what the Saints have on offense now, working with Derek Carr, Alvin Kamara, et cetera, thoughts on that?
So I think he did just over his career, I think he's done a nice job developing quarterbacks, which they're going to have to do, probably get a new young one in New Orleans soon. But, you know, in Dallas, Dak Prescott was good. He made him really good. And then in Philadelphia here, they wanted to throw the ball to start the season. It wasn't working. They were 2-2. You mentioned that game against the Saints. And they realized, he realized, our bread and butter is to run the football. And they created this scheme where they run it a lot, but also create enough in the passing game. I think he's done a nice job this season. I think he's going to be a good coach for you guys.
And I know you got to go, but I got to keep picking your brain here, because when it comes to Saquon Barkley, what was the feeling in Philadelphia when the fans realized that the Giants let this guy go?
It was a lot of excitement because he's, you know, he's from just north of Philadelphia. He's a Pennsylvania kid, so there was that excitement.
Well, if it's north of Baton Rouge, it's all the same.
Yeah, it is. So. You're right about that. So with that, it was excitement, but I don't think people realized how good he still was until the season started. Because, you know, for the Giants, his numbers went down because they were so bad. It was like, is he still the same guy? Is it worth it? And then once we started watching him in the first few games, like, oh, my goodness, how did the Giants let this guy go? He's amazing.
How do you see this playing out? You got Jalen Hurts and, you know, talk about scales, offense, defense, coaches. How about Jalen Hurts, Patrick Mahomes? How do you see this game playing out?
I think it's going to be points. It's a fast track. It's a dome. You have two. But you have Andy Reid with 2 weeks to prepare. I know we have two good defenses in this game, two top five defenses. I think there's going to be points. Last time we saw this game 2 years ago, it was 38-35. I don't know if we get quite that high, but I think it's in the upper 20s or low 30s to get to win this game.
But see, that brings me to another point, which is, and I don't mean to take in an area where you don't want to go, but the total on this game started at 49 and a half. It's down to 48.
Yeah.
I don't get that. And going back to, you mentioned the Commanders game. Man, that was the easiest bet I ever won in my life
because the
Eagles beat the over.
Yeah.
The total on a game. So I don't see where in the world, I know he's got to go, but I don't know where in the world we they come in with the under on this.
I don't think so either. I mean,
like
I know,
you mentioned a fast track, it's indoors.
Well,
I don't.
The last time Saquon Barkley played on turf was in Los Angeles in November. He ran for 255. I mean, you get these skill players on turf, they take off. I think we're getting an over game too.
I don't see, and look, me and them, do you own wager and make your own guess, but I don't know. Any final thoughts before you go, Joe? I appreciate your
time. I appreciate you having me. New Orleans has been amazing. Thank you for the recommendation. I'm going to do a show and then get a po' boy after that.
Yeah, Parkway and then Brocato's. Real quick, and when it comes to Philly cheesesteaks, what's it, Geno's or Pat's?
So those are the two big ones. I would go to, if you ever come up to Philadelphia, John's Roast Pork. That's the place.
Really?
Yes.
And is it with or without? Is that what y'all talk about, the cheese?
Yeah,
whiz?
You could say it. Yeah, with or without. Or you could, that's cheese whiz, which is like the artificial stuff. Or you can just get like American or provolone.
Go to Parkway and get the best po' boy in your life.
Oh, I can't wait. Thank you.
I get some people mad listening, but that's the way I feel about it. Thank you, Joe Giglio. Enjoy your time with the city. Appreciate it, man. Fly, Eagles, fly. Well, actually, fly over fly is what I'm looking at. I don't really care. 8:54 and okay, good. Yeah, we're going to take a break here on WWL. For traffic. I didn't know if he was back. .909, they had that big party last night. It was a late arriving crowd, slow to warm up, but they're heating up rapidly here, and the intensity is only going to build as we get closer to the Super Bowl on Sunday. And I downloaded NFL One Pass. That's an app that you can download. It's free, and you get all the information you need. 4 days, 7 hours, 20 minutes, 9 seconds away from kickoff, and they got all the information you need there about the Super Bowl experience. Presented by Panini. I may as well mention that because they paid for it, right? And it opens at 3 o'clock this afternoon, and I was walking through it yesterday. And if you're an NFL fan, it is like, and I'm trying to see the way I got a text here from the NFL One Pass that described it, and they put it in a better way than I could. And it's like almost like a theme park, an NFL theme park in a way, with so many interactive things that the kids can do and adults can do, kick a field goal, kick a ball, throw it, sprint, run through the tackling dummies, those kind of things, all kind of helmet displays. You can watch a football being made. I think they'll custom make a football for you. I would bring a credit card for that. And when it comes to Saturday is going to be a huge day. Not just for football fans, but for the locals here with so many things going on. And I'm just going to recap a couple of them real quick. Of course, you got the Super Bowl parade that starts at around 9 o'clock, I think it starts. Then which runs pretty much a crew of Boo route. You got the Louisiana Culture Festival going on in French Market District, which is in a way kind of like a mini French Quarter Fest. And then you got the Super Bowl experience going on in the convention center. And you can find out more at that NFL app that I told you about, NFL One Pass, but they have shuttles that they've set up so you don't have to worry about parking. And it's cheaper, and they got four pickup sites I'll tell you about in a second, but it's far cheaper than you're going to pay to park. Only $10 per ride or round trip. Children under 12 and under ride free. You can get your tickets on site at the pickup locations, and the sales are cashless. And the locations are Delgado Community College on Orleans Avenue, Oakwood Shopping Center behind JCPenney, New Orleans East, the old Plaza Mall. I'm sure there'll be signage to direct you where to go. And the Audubon Nature Institute on Magazine. And they drop you off at the intersection of North and South Diamond Streets and Convention Center Boulevard, which is right in the middle of everything. So really, for $10 a person, kids under 12 free, you don't have to worry about traffic or parking. They'll bring you right to where you need to go. The hours are extremely user-friendly because the shuttles are going to run, and I have it in front of me here, tomorrow from 2 p.m. until 11 p.m., and from on Saturday from 8 a.m. till 11 p.m. And I walked through the Super Bowl experience yesterday, not the media part, but the actual part of it. They're still putting it together. It's going to be ready to go by 3 o'clock. And if you're an NFL fan, if you have kids in your house that are an NFL fan, I know sometimes you can be hesitant to come downtown, but either take advantage of that shuttle or somehow get yourself down here, because that Super Bowl experience really is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. We may not have another Super Bowl 10, 12 years. Who knows? And that's the earliest possible. So don't miss it. Take advantage of all the stuff that's going on. Come on down this weekend. Have some fun. And with the president now coming on Sunday, you will not find a more secure, safer area in the world than you will here for all the Super Bowl activities. We're going to talk to Mike Haas in a little bit, find out about the Dome, also see who else wanders by that we can grab right now. We want to talk to Bo Jones, president and CEO of the Water Institute, because life does go on beyond the Super Bowl, and they're studying Louisiana wetlands to judge their ability to hold blue carbon. Good morning, Bo Jones. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing great this morning.
Tell me about the Water Institute for people that don't know. What is that?
Yeah, so the Water Institute, if you've seen, we're the kind of spaceship-looking building up there on the river in Baton Rouge. We have an office here at UNO in New Orleans as well. And we're an applied research organization dedicated to reducing the vulnerability of people, communities, and ecosystems and economies. We were founded here in Louisiana after the Deepwater Horizon oil spill, and we try and bring science and planning to really, really hard problems.
So for people that think, when they hear this, and I'm not trying to be controversial, Bo, but I know from the text I get, sometimes people hear this and they think, I'll to eliminate oil and gas. That is not what you're trying to do at all, is it?
No, what we're trying to do is study the impacts and the benefits and the way to protect coastal Louisiana. And, you know, one of the interesting things that we have in Louisiana is, we're all stakeholders here. The industry, stakeholders here. If we lose coastal Louisiana, some of the biggest losers in that are many of the industrial partners that exist in and around coastal Louisiana. Many of the workers that work inside the oil and gas industry and other industries, they live here. They call this place home. And so we don't really have the benefit of kind of picking size. What we do is try and find the best way to use science and planning to make hard decisions a little less hard, right? And so that takes everybody at the table.
And along those lines, oil and gas is not going away. And I just don't like when people think it's either or. It can be one at the benefit of the other. And what you guys are trying to do, and we'll talk about blue carbon in a minute, is to monetize this, right? That's what we're trying to do, to do what's right scientifically and also to do what's best commercially for the state of Louisiana.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Water Institute's not trying to monetize anything, but what we're trying to do is help recognize what the value of this habitat and this area that we have is. Right now, look, you and I know that there's great redfish out there. We know there's great duck hunting. We know that it's a beautiful place to watch a sunset in coastal Louisiana. We also know that over the last 100 years, there have been a lot of minerals and a lot of, you know, fur and all kinds of extractive economies. One of the things that we're trying to do is recognize what are those other benefits and how can we quantify them to the same way that you would quantify a property value? And so coastal Louisiana.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. I'm here every day.
Yeah, coastal Louisiana sequesters an incredible amount of carbon, you know, of the coastal habitats in the world. It's about 6 to 8% of the global carbon sequestration from tidal wetlands. So we think about this as our backyard, and it is our backyard, and care about it because of it. But this is an internationally relevant area, and that's one of the things that we're looking at is what can the science show about what is the value of the carbon that's pulled down out of the atmosphere and stored here in coastal wetlands? Because and if we lose it, we lose that too.
And I phrased that poorly. I'm not trying to imply that you guys are trying to monetize anything, but in the process of what you're doing, there could be opportunities to monetize this, which leads to jobs, which leads to a healthier environment, which is a win-win situation. That's accurate?
Well, exactly. And Tommy, you know, coastal Louisiana, you know, I can't help but take the parlay of the Super Bowl talk right before, which I'm really excited to bring my kids down to this weekend. But, you know, coastal Louisiana, every 100 minutes we lose the equivalent of a football field of land. Every 100 minutes we lose a football field of land. That's That's what we're dealing with here. And so not just the monetization of potentially pulling down carbon, right, and the, all the benefits, but if we don't act in coastal Louisiana over the next 50 years, we stand to lose an additional $15 to $25 billion a year of economic potential in coastal Louisiana just by not acting to protect and restore coastal Louisiana.
A quick word about blue carbon before we let you go.
Yeah. What we're trying to do is figure out all of the benefits of coastal Louisiana. That includes the carbon molecules that are pulled down, and this is something we value coastal Louisiana here, and we think it's valuable to the rest of the world. And so what we're trying to do is figure out, down to the molecular level, how valuable is it and how much should people care about it.
Thank you, Bo. I appreciate it. If people want to find out more about the Water Institute, how do they do it?
Waterinstitute.org, or come see us in Baton Rouge or in New Orleans.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again after the big game is over with and we have time to sit down and talk about this because it's very important. We'll get more into blue carbon. Thank you. We're live here at the Radio Row Host Committee's Media Center celebrating Big Game Week in New Orleans, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. It is a work in progress. It is live radio, and we're joined now by Mike Thiesing and Justin Pitcock, and you guys, first of all, are Marines and have the best-looking uniform. I'm not trying to make it a competition, but there is nothing like that dress blue uniform.
I'm
is
glad
that,
you said yeah. it before we could.
No, but they're really.
It's not a competition, first of all. We already know we have the best
there's
uniform.
No competition. It's already been
right.
done. Tell me why you guys are here.
We're here to do the Super Bowl flyover. So we have four V-22s in town from each of our squadrons, and we're excited to show the world the V-22 and on Super Bowl Sunday.
I wish I knew. Are you colonels? Or I'm trying to get the ranking right.
I'm a lieutenant colonel.
I'm a major.
Major?
Yeah.
Captain. Okay. So how many of y'all, four, will be flying?
Yeah, we're going to have four Ospreys in formation, and then we'll have two F-35s with us as well.
Wow. So do you guys fly out of the Joint Reserve Base, or are you from out of town?
My unit's stationed in New River.
And I'm out of California, out of San Diego.
Okay, so have we're you in town practicing at the Joint Reserve Base?
Yeah. Yesterday we went flying. We put up six aircraft, and we did several runs over the dome in formation of four, and it looked great.
And we're going again on Friday.
I hate to ask you this. I live in Belchase, but I generally nap between 1 and 2, so if you could kind of...
We'll put it in stealth mode for you.
Tell me about what we're going to see or what the people are going to see fly over. Describe the aircraft, if you could, because you'll obviously hear these numbers, B-20 this, F that, we don't know.
Sure, the V-22 Osprey is a tilt rotor aircraft. So
You're saying B or V?
V, like Victor.
V? Okay.
Yes, sir. And so we can take off like a helicopter and then turn into an airplane and go fast. So from 0 to 260 knots, and you'll see us in airplane mode, which means we'll be doing about 250 knots over the Superdome on Super Bowl Sunday.
How fast is that in terms of miles per hour or airspeed? How do you
300-ish.
300-ish. I'm trying to look at the Osprey aircraft here online as we talk about it. Tell me about the F-35s. Is that it?
Yeah, the F-35 aircraft is one of the Marine Corps' newest fighter aircraft. It's not my specialty, but...
A little less sexy than the Osprey, we like to say. But
it's not as good as us, that's for sure.
Well, wait, now why would you say that?
No, well, they're
because
great
I've
guys.
Seen these F-35s.
They're cool.
Wait, that's... What are you showing me now?
This is actually us flying yesterday.
That's the Osprey?
This is the Osprey, that's right.
But who said F-35?
The F-35 is also going to be here. So we're going to have four V-22s and two F-35s in formation on Super Bowl.
So the Osprey, if I could describe it, would look something like the front of a bomber and a helicopter body almost with propellers but wings. Am I close there or not?
You're absolutely right. It's a transformer.
And what is the idea behind this aircraft? It was designed to do what exactly?
Take off like a helicopter and fly like an airplane.
That's right. We can fly all around the world and then land in your backyard.
What kind of like range? I don't know if that's secure information or not, but how far can you go without refueling?
So typically we have about a 600 to 700 combat radius, so that's there and back. But really we can fly unlimited. We're able to refuel in the air. So we can go, if we have a tanker, we can keep going.
Now, do you guys fly F-35s as well or not?
No,
just
we don't.
V-22.
Just the
V-22.
So when it comes to the... You were flying the Ospreys yesterday in Belchase?
Yeah, this was us yesterday.
Okay. Well, I can't see my house from here, though. tell me, you're going to be flying today?
We'll be flying. Our next flight's going to be Friday. We're going to be teamed up with the F-35s. We'll do a practice run over the stadium a couple of times, and then we'll be ready to go for Sunday.
I'll be looking at them. Tell me a little bit about Marine Aviation, if you will, how you guys got into it, because I know everybody has a story behind a story, and I want to hear yours.
And it's pretty easy.
Is it you know, Lieutenant Colonel, but you call yourself Colonel, right?
Lieutenant Colonel, yeah, it's pretty easy. I'm like a lot of the folks from 20 or 30 years ago. You watch Top Gun,
yeah.
You get the itch. And then you want to be a pilot, but then you realize that the Marine Corps pilots are a lot cooler than the Navy pilots, and we do a lot cooler things, so I joined the Marine Corps.
Will any of the Navy pilots be involved on Sunday?
Or we wouldn't let them close.
Wouldn't let them close.
This is actually...
You don't trust them with the aircraft.
They're not good enough.
Well,
it's okay. The Marine Corps' 250th birthday this year, so we're doing it up big, and that's part of why we're in town.
How did you get into aviation?
Similarly, but I will add that 9/11 happened my freshman year in college, and so was looking for a way to serve and always liked airplanes. So, once I drank the Marine Corps Kool-Aid, there was no looking back.
How hard is it to become a pilot of one of these aircraft for people that don't understand the technical skills?
Well, even we can do it.
Between that and a commercial aircraft, for example.
You know, it's very, we go through rigorous training programs to ensure that we're ready to go. We fly aircraft in a very dynamic way, so... airline pilots fly as a single aircraft. We always fly at minimum as a section or team of two airplanes. So we're flying in close formation. We work together, or large flight formations up to 20 or 30 aircraft that are flying together. That's just the type of aviation that no one else in the world does. And not only do we fly, but we also fight with these aircraft. We do missions and we support Marines on the ground.
We're both from reserve squadron, so many of our comrades are airline pilots as mm-hmm. well, so they do both.
Are you both commercial pilots or
not? Neither one of us fly for the airlines. So.
But you are in the reserves?
That's correct.
We are in the reserves.
Okay. Or reserve pilots.
Tell me about career paths for people that are listening and are young people that might be interested in a career with the Marine Corps, especially in aviation.
I mean, I think it's an incredible opportunity. I grew up in North Central Texas, and just wasn't exposed to, I had traveled before, but the access that you get to, fighting for your country across the world, representing your country across the world is just unmatched. And you can do that by putting yourself forward, raising your hand, and then going through the rigorous training that we do, which is, an opportunity in itself.
The career path, not the flight path, is through a university first, or how does that work?
So to be an officer, so in the Marine Corps, all of the pilots are officers. So before you can join as an officer, yeah, you have to go and get your degree. You don't necessarily have to go through the Naval Academy. You can just go to college, and then when you're done, you can go to your local recruiter, sign up, and do it that way. So otherwise, if you want to go the enlisted route, and do what we say, they do all the work.
Yeah.
And those guys, they can just go to your local recruiter after you're done with your high school.
I know this is Naval Air, and I hate to bring that up, and please don't beat me up about
this.
We
are Naval Aviators, so it's okay.
It's all right.
The Marine Corps is a department of the Navy.
I don't know where the competition stands, but how accurate is something like when we see Officer and a Gentleman, for example, and when it comes to weeding out, I'm going to talk about the Deborah Winger part, because I'm sure you guys got stories on that, too, that we don't need to hear, although I would like to hear them later. But when it comes to the competition involved and seeing who really wants to be a pilot and who doesn't, how accurate is something like that when we see it?
When I went through officer candidate school, our attrition rate was up to 40%.
Really?
Yeah. 40 and 50%. And then flight school, you can see attrition rates that high as well. So you make it through one step, and then there's another gate.
It just keeps getting more difficult because the competition keeps getting steeper and steeper and steeper until you get to the top, and then it doesn't stop there because you think you're really, really great. Look at me. I just got my wings. I'm a pilot now. And then you show up to a squadron full of combat veterans who are much better than you in the aircraft, and you are now back at the bottom, and you have to just keep working. It's a constant education. It's a constant search of knowledge of the aircraft and
is there
aviation.
Is there one commonality or one tipping point where you really see the big attrition, one thing where people wash out?
No, I don't think there's a single point. OCS is hard because it's there's a lot of physical training, and then after that, in flight school, a lot of it is swimming. So, a lot of the attrition rate happens in the swimming pool. So you got to swim a mile, you got to do all these different strokes, and that tends to weed some people out as well. So, and in fact, our crew chiefs, that's one of the big hang-ups there too.
I know you guys have to go because the producers are waving me, but, you know, unlike air traffic controllers, I tend to ignore them. Real quick, how do you coordinate all of that with timing with the national anthem and everything else? Because you can't just sit there hovering or parking.
How do you really do that? We spent a lot of time working with the NFL to understand exactly the point where they want us overhead. And then once they give us the exact time, so by the hour, minute, and second, they said, this is exactly the time we want you overhead. And we said, absolutely, yes, we can do that.
But precision is your business.
This is our bread and butter.
We do all the planning to ensure that we will be on time, on target.
An honor talking to you, gentlemen. I'll be looking. I'll be waving Amari and Belchase if you see me wave back, all right?
We certainly will.
So nice to meet you, Thomas.
An honor meeting y'all, really. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks a lot, Thomas.
And enjoy the Super Bowl. Y'all got predictions on the game or not?
Oh, absolutely. Patrick Mahomes is from East Texas, so go Chiefs.
And you?
Yeah, I think Mahomes is gonna hold it down, and I think Buckner is gonna be able to give him a game winner. So Chiefs by three.
Over the under. What do you think?
Ooh,
I think it's gonna be the under.
I want to see a close game, so it's gonna be the under.
I'm going with the over. We'll see. Marines, thank you, sir. Officers, I appreciate it. We have a major and a lieutenant colonel and a captain. Thank you for stopping by, all y'all. And thank. I know it's cliche to say thank you for your service, but I mean it sincerely. Really, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
And we'll be looking forward to that. We'll take a break here on WWL live from the Super Bowl Radio Row, Host Committee's Media Center, celebrating Big Game Week in New Orleans, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith, and So-So. When you see the flyovers on Sunday over the dome on TV, these are the gentlemen that will be in the cockpit behind the controls. Thank you, sirs. We'll take a break, come back, talk to Mike Haas here on WWL. 35 as we make our way through this Wednesday morning. Mike Haas joins us, voice of the Saints, who also is involved with the Superdome in a major way. How are you, Mike?
I am well. Traffic was a little rough getting down here. You know, I ride my bike from the Superdome to here because there's no parking and traffic. And it's a piece of cake, except you have to stop for red lights, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, well, it was beautiful out there.
You may. A lot of them.
I know. I'm like, I feel like I better follow the rules because I want them to follow the rules.
Let's talk about the Superdome and the preparation that was involved for this. I was wondering, first of all, you know, they had the opening night, and I got me thinking about the field, and I know the media was not allowed on the field per se on the sidelines. Is this a whole new field for the Super Bowl, or is it this field? No?
Same field.
Okay.
Same. I mean, you know, so they put in a new field each year. Doesn't get, we always hope it gets more play with Saints playoffs, end of the season, but Bayou Classic, high school football, the New Orleans Arnold Carries. Well, there's a certain number of games, but no, this is the same field.
And sometimes it's better when the field is not brand new, right?
Right. I think it gets a little play. I mean, there used to be times, I was told, this is pre my arrival, that when you would put in a new field, you kind of want it to have a little wear. Mm-hmm. So they would bring in high school marching bands to kind of walk and do the field just to kind of, you know, get it a little. And then they brush it, of course, and make sure the rubber and the sand are perfect, which it will be perfect.
Before they, I lost weight, they would bring me in to walk around on it. I never knew that. Let's talk about the crew that comes in and prepares it, paints the end zones and all that kind of stuff. Is that the Saints crew or the
NFL.
Superdome crew?
It's all NFL. With the assistance of our Superdome crew, you know, we have Renee, who is just unbelievable, been there so many, many years. And, you know, they help, but it's our crew that really goes through year in and year out, who when we have the Sugar Bowl one day and something else the next, I mean, they go in and clean it, paint it. So it's in conjunction, but it is the NFL, and they've got kind of what I would call the initial paint. I think they'll have more as they go forward because they're trying to also have rehearsals on the field, and so I think by the time rehearsals get done, they'll go in and just
touch it up.
It's going to be, the building itself is beautiful,
right?
And the colors pop so amazingly. That green and that red, you can't miss it. The building was beautiful already, but it really pops.
You know, Tim Zimmer back at the station, he swears that the green and the red in the logo, and you've heard this before, you know.
No.
But what can you do? What
but
can
it's
you
not.
Do? People believe, I know it's not,
it's
but
not.
People just believe it.
It's not even, like, if we put the colors out there, it's not even close to the green for Philly.
Well, you know, that goes to tell you about Christmas, too. Christmas is part of the conspiracy as well, red and green, right? You know what I'm saying? No, but seriously, when it comes to the end zones and when it comes to the Super Bowl logos and all that, this may be a dumb question, but these are the things, Mike Haas, I think about. Do they cut those end zones out and send them somewhere to the Hall of Fame, or do they just or do you know?
The field itself, and this is not my area, so I will not speak in depth about it. The field itself will get, will have new life. Mm-hmm. And I'm told, and this will be
the because
NFL,
it's new every year. They change every year.
Change every year. And that it will stay in town at a Nord facility. That's what I've been told. I don't know anything about anything else.
Paint it up like it is?
I think it has to be cleaned to an extent. Certainly the NFL shield. So some things have to be clean because you have to also, this is forget NFL, take a Saints season. You know, you have to get the sand and the rubber, vacuum it back up into these huge white bags, thousands and thousands of pounds, set it off to the side because then you got to roll the turf up, which comes in pieces. It's like a puzzle, and then ship it like that. So then you put the sand and the rubber back down. So that part I love. There's one at Lusher High School, Tom Benson Field in Canton, Ohio, has a former field. So that part is fantastic that it has, you know, a second life.
And I'm not trying to dwell on the excruciating minutia, but nothing just happens, and the field fascinates me. So we're going to take a quick break. We have a surprise guest when we come back, Mike. A surprise guest. That's all I'll say. 9:40, 20 till 10. Traffic now, WWL. .9 46, 14 till 10. We're here at the Convention Center on Radio Row celebrating a big game week. And, man, this is an honor because normally I'm at home listening to these guys on Sunday afternoon, and I thank them both for making this season enjoyable. Not only is Mike Hoss here, the voice of the Saints, but Deuce McAllister joins us on a hotline. What a surprise. How you doing, Deuce?
I'm doing well. How are you gentlemen doing?
We're doing
Deuce!
Great, man.
Deuce!
Do you guys, like, not talk after the season, or what happens? Do y'all go your separate ways?
We go our separate ways. We wave at each other, and it's just like, you know, we say, hey, this is a goodbye, but it's not forever. I'll see you in a couple weeks. That's how it goes, Tommy.
Man, I'm going to tell you what. I'm going to thank
you
again. I'm going to thank you again, as I have personally, but as a fan, for making this season, because it was a tough season, but y'all made it enjoyable to listen to. It was honest, it was candid, but it was fair, and I think y'all do a tremendous job. But enough of that. Tell me, Deuce, how'd you come to be the bearer of the Lombardi Trophy?
The bearer of the Lombardi Trophy. I don't know how it all came together, but I'm extremely grateful, you know, that we were able to make it work. And so I've been fortunate enough to be involved with it prior. I guess it was, 11 years ago in 2013. And so things went well there. And this year, you know, to be able to add a parade to it and, you know, just kind of kick off Super Bowl week, you know, that's something that only happens in New Orleans. And so New Orleans company, New Orleans, obviously the city, NFL, the Saints, you know, we want to do a great job. We want to be great hosts. And like you talked about, since we could not be in the Super Bowl, then we wanted to kind of do our part to showcase our city and our state.
And you'll be bringing it into the Super Bowl experience today, right?
I will be bringing it into the Super Bowl experience later on today. Pretty excited about that. And, you know, one of the things for me, I've been blessed and fortunate enough to do a lot of, you know, pretty cool things in the NFL. And, has given me that opportunity. But, man, for me to be able to have my family there to experience it with me, you know, it's that has been probably one of the coolest pieces. And so my son's, his football and basketball team, they were able to kind of walk in the parade and experience it. And, you know, we got a couple of shots. And today, Mike, how about this? And Tommy, I will have some of the best security that probably rivals from a presidential standpoint. But it's not just the NFL and the state troopers. I will have what I call my top flight security. So my youngest son, he and a couple of his friends, they will be my security detail. So I don't know how many people can say they have 11-year-old and 12-year-old security detail with the Super Bowl trophy, but man, they're excited about it.
Dude, you got to get them an earpiece.
Yeah,
you got to get them an earpiece.
And
well, hey,
Mike, they
already got their glasses on and their security. I mean, we're talking about 11 year olds, and so they're pretty excited. I told them, look, you know,
I can't bring your whole class or your whole whatever grade, but that's what they want. And so I don't know how they're containing themselves at school, but yeah, they're pretty excited about it. And I am as well.
Deuce, I'm honored to know you. You know that, and Mike and everybody I work with here. But one thing that impresses me about you, and I was talking to Thomas Morstead about this earlier, despite everything you've achieved on the field, which is notable, and you said you were blessed, and you were blessed, but you earned a lot of what you have now. You earned most of it. It's opportunity and preparation. I get all that. But tell me about the importance and, to me, the gold of being in any kind of broadcasting or football or what have you. The gold is when you can get your family involved. Talk about the importance of that, if you will, please, because you mentioned your sons.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, so many people sacrifice. So many people sacrifice for you to be able to not just to play the game, but even to help you get to that level. I mean, a lot of people sacrifice, and I think, you know, sometimes you get so caught up in it that you don't realize. And once it's over, you kind of see, man, you gave up this or you were doing this. And it's no different, you know, from the coaches, their families as well. I mean, it's a lot of time. And Hoss knows this. It's a lot of time. The preparation, it just doesn't happen during the season. I mean, the stuff that happens in the off season, that all has to be put in place. I mean, and so you literally know, hey, this is what I want to work on. This is what we will do. I can change it, but you have to have that structure in place. And so from a player standpoint, a game plan has to be put in place. You're watching film, you're evaluating that, but you miss out a lot. And so for me to have that opportunity for them to be able to go and experience it and see it, you know, there's not a lot more that you would trade for that.
And the reason I'm bringing it up, Newell Norman sitting here, he was sheriff. He gave up a lot in his life to be sheriff, a lot of family time. Mike Hoss gave up a lot in his. I got up from my table numerous times, Christmas dinner to Thanksgiving dinner, to go MC car giveaways because you can't turn down the business. It always is a balance as a parent to do business and to take care of your job and your career and also to balance being a parent. I think you've done a hell of a job doing that. I really do.
Well, I mean, I agree. I mean, we all make decisions, and, you know, there's not many people as far as from a parent standpoint, hey, look, I want my kids to have better opportunities than me. And so that's no different than any other individual. And so for the world that I lived in as far as the sporting world, to give them exposure and access, you know, that's the only thing that I could ask. And, you know, they have to kind of want it and want to do it themselves. But, you know, for me to give them that access is pretty unique. And so, guys, I do have to – so I am doing today, right now, the health and body and mind screening with Tulane University and NFL, the Players Care Foundation. So I had a hand grip test, and my numbers came back okay. Did some blood work. I did body composition. That wasn't pretty, but, you know, it's a work in progress. And so the Player Care Foundation in Tulane, they invite a lot of the guys. You have to sign up for it. They invite it. They want to do your testing. They want to do your screening. And so this was one of the first days that it kicked off. And so to see a lot of the former players, guys, you know, that are here for the Super Bowl, they're coming to get tested and, you know, just try to improve the health of some of those athletes that we just talked about.
Deuce, I hope we get you back sometime to talk about some X's and O's and some football. I just want to talk to you personally because I'm a big fan of yours and Mike's and everybody else. Good to have you all together, man. Congratulations. We'll look for you. And a quick word on that Super Bowl experience. If you got kids, you got to bring them down. Wouldn't you agree?
It starts today. It goes to Saturday. You got to go and experience it. And they have something for all age groups as well. It doesn't have to be a diehard football fan. Just trust me, it's well worth it.
And shuttles all over. You don't even have to drive. They'll pick you up at Delgado, at Oakwood, at Audubon Park, and also at
bike.
Yeah, you can ride. You can bike if you want. Also at the Plaza New Orleans East. Thank you, Deuce McAllister. We'll look for you this afternoon. Thank you, Mike Hoss. Newell Norman's coming up next. We'll find out what he's got as we continue here at the Convention Center, Radio Row, the Host Committee's Media Center, celebrating Big Game Week, powered by Lambert, Zaney, Smith & Soso. Back in a flash, WWL.